It's up first, I mean, yeah, they're, I'm gonna, I'll just run over there in a minute. A little bit of conflict.
Transportation will come to order and welcome everybody. We have two bills up for public hearing and possible work session, and because of maybe a couple of late amendments and no fiscal and revenue statements, we're not gonna be able to work them, so we'll, but we'll hear them and make sure everybody's okay, so that when it comes time to move them, we'll be ready. And with that, I'm gonna go ahead and open a public hearing on House Bill 3676. And Patrick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 3676 is what we affectionately like to call the Omnibus Transportation Bill. I think this is our fourth time hearing this bill, but it's a little different each time, so I'll do a quick run-through since we're in session. This bill does several things. First, it eliminates the required contribution for statewide multimodal study that was passed under Connect Oregon 2. It revises the formula for distribution of heavy vehicle registration fees, deletes the requirement that standards for medium-speed electric vehicles be consistent with federal standards for such vehicles, as those standards don't exist. It eliminates the requirement that funds derived from the Pacific Wonderland vehicle registration plate be used to establish and maintain an Oregon History Center at the state capitol. It authorizes DAS to make available, sell, distribute, and dispense alternative fuel to private entities. It authorizes the Travel Information Council to borrow money, clarifies the requirement that vehicles slow down or change lanes when passing emergency vehicles, ambulances, and tow trucks to include designated speeds. That one, I think we discussed at the last meeting. It clarifies that ATV seatbelt requirements that we passed last, that the committee passed, I'm sorry, last session, apply only on public lands and private lands open to the general public for ATV recreation. The measure also clarifies allowances under variance permits, over width permits. Another measure requires ODOT to make quarterly reports to the Legislative Revenue Office and the Legislative Committees on Revenue regarding estimates of revenue raised by House Bill 2001. And the measure has an emergency clause and takes effect upon passage. In your packets also, you will find a dash 3 amendment. I think I sent your offices a dash 2 this morning, and then about a half an hour later sent a dash 3. The dash 3 replaces the dash 2, so if you have both of them, the dash 3 amendment is the one that you'd want to focus on. And I believe we have folks here that are going to come speak to that amendment.
Okay. And with that, my intent is to probably focus on the newest edition, which we haven't heard before. And then if there are other people that want to speak, we'll bring them up. Or if you have questions about any of the other, we'll get them answered. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and ask Chris Warner, I have Judith Estep, and crew.
Yeah. Chair Beyer, members of the committee, thank you very much. For the record, Chris, I'm the governor's transportation liaison. First, I'd just like to introduce Judith Estep from Daimler North America. We had a quick amendment that we just found out about in December that I think I've talked to most of your offices, that we thank you very much for considering it. It deals with compressed natural gas and some research that they want to do at the Daimler truck facility on Swan Island. Also in the audience are folks from the Department of Administrative Services who could answer any questions about the facility that we're talking about. So with that, I think the simple equation is they would like to test some of their trucks that have compressed natural gas through their facility in Portland. Unfortunately, there's nowhere to actually purchase compressed natural gas on a retail level. As luck would have it, there is a DAS facility on Swan Island very close to where Daimler does their work. Unfortunately, there's a statutory prohibition for them to actually dispense it to the public. So what this amendment would do is we've tried to narrowly craft it by rule. They would allow them to dispense compressed natural gas for these purposes if there's no other market that is available out there. So I'll turn it over to Judith, and she can talk a little bit about what they're doing with Daimler. And we also brought some other folks from the engineering section if there's any questions about their process. So go ahead.
Good afternoon, Chairman Beyer and committee members. For the record, my name is Judith Estep. I am representing Daimler Trucks North America. And we have a need for use of the Swan Island DAS facility to support our reliability growth test program related to compressed natural gas vehicles, and we are here to address any questions or concerns that you may have.
Okay. So are there any questions? Representative Schaffler.
Thank you. Are you just, this is just, are they testing this on cars too?
No, we're just testing it on heavy, medium-duty vehicles.
And then, ma'am?
Yes, follow-up.
And would they be, you guys are just, way iron, are you just doing federal government contracts up there now, or are you talking about trucks will be working out in the marketplace?
Yes, in the marketplace.
One more. No.
Yes.
So then, if this is successful, and you can square this away, this would probably increase the need for natural gas in the state, correct?
It could, yes.
Thank
nice
you.
Nice try, Schaffler.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Edwards.
Chris, is there a precedent for this type of activity? In other words, repurposing a formerly public-only facility for the purposes of the private sector for a limited duration?
May I call up the folks from DAS facility? They might have a better answer to that.
To Marjorie or somebody, want to come on up?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I, for one, will go to great lengths to keep your industry in the state. Just want to let you know that.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Brian King, the fleet manager for statewide fleet administration at the Department of Administrative Services. And I'm sorry, I missed the question.
Nope.
So. Sure, I'll gladly repeat it. I was just asking if there's any precedent for taking a formerly public-only facility and using it for the private sector for a limited period.
Madam Chair, Representative Edwards, not that I'm aware of. However, there are other instances where public access to state facilities is there, but I can't think of one right now that where one was repurposed.
Okay.
Follow-up?
Are the restrictions on this test then consistent with any other experiment that's been done in the past? I'm just curious if we're setting a precedent here that could be used to expand the usage of publicly owned facilities in other areas that are outside the scope of the proposed test.
Madam Chair, Representative Edwards, I don't have an answer for that question. Perhaps Chris does.
Madam Chair, Representative Edwards, I don't think this is a precedent we would like to send. I think that the fact that since we can't purchase it anywhere else is the reason that we're taking these means as far as trying to ensure that they're being able to do their tests. And hopefully at some point the market for the compressed natural gas will increase so that we won't have to be in that business anymore.
Representative Shaw?
I'll bet I could find some nice people that could provide some compressed natural gas on the market here if we go down this direction, and we wouldn't have to do it through the state anymore.
If that, we get to that point, that would be great.
Madam Chair?
Follow-up?
Matter of fact, they'll bring it to us in great big giant ships, drop it off right up on Bradwood Landing.
That's liquefied.
I understand, but it can all be done. Representative, are you suggesting it can't be done?
No.
I know it can be done. But I'm off the bill now and on something else.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you. Representative Schaffler.
Can I talk about the bread? I'm just kidding.
Take it outside.
Yeah.
Okay, so I don't see any other questions.
Could I have a follow-up to Representative Edwards? And you really didn't have an answer as to whether this was precedent-setting. What would be your reaction if the same sort of, not necessarily with gas or, you know, the compressed natural gas, if another private entity wanted to use some sort of a public station like this? Would you do it case-by-case basis or?
Chair Byer, Representative Doherty, I think we would, I would leave it to the administrative rule process within DAS. I don't think it's something that we necessarily want to open up. I think the opportunity with the testing of the vehicles is fairly limited, but I don't think that DAS wants to be into a kind of a retail filling opportunity. So I think we would try to narrow it as much to this one opportunity with the testing of the trucks.
Yeah, thank you for your answer.
Thank you, Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious, the testing, my understanding of using compressed gas as opposed to liquid fuel is that it burns cleaner and that you have a lower emission issues. Mm-hmm. Am I correct in that understanding? Is that one of the reasons you're conducting the testing?
Chairman Byer and Representative Bentz, that is correct.
Can you speak into the microphone?
Sorry, thank you. For the testimony that we provided, we quoted a 28% reduction in the greenhouse gases versus burning diesel fuel, yes.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Follow up.
And what about fuel efficiency? From a cost standpoint, is this a positive thing if you can convert your fleet of trucks from diesel fuel to mm-hmm. natural gas? And in addition to the cleaner fuel, what other benefits are there?
From the cost of fuel, I believe the cost of fuel is lower for compressed natural gas than diesel. And from that perspective, it would be a cost savings. Our focus primarily is on the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What about miles per gallon or miles per liter or whatever it is mm-hmm. that you measure this with?
Do you guys have the statistics on?
Yeah, come on.
Madam Chair, and I'm Ryan Jeffries, the engineering manager at Daimler Trucks for alternate fuels. To answer your question, Representative Bentz, the fuel economy of natural gas engines is not widely studied at this point. However, preliminary studies show that natural gas engines are on par with their diesel equivalents, if not at a slight loss on the economy side.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the benefit indeed is, as was previously stated, the reduction in greenhouse gases. It's not necessarily a cost matter. It's a cleaner burning fuel benefit.
Chair Byer, Representative Bentz, there are a number of benefits. There are the greenhouse gas reduction. There is the ability to source fuel domestically. It's also renewable fuel. There are some cost improvements or cost savings in various markets with compressed natural gas, and as well as some credits that are currently available to some of our customers.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Can I say one additional question?
Again, Chris Warner. I just wanted to assure the committee that I've spoken with different folks within the distribution industry, and there wasn't a place in the Portland area. So I confirmed that, and so they've been supportive of our efforts. So.
And I was going to ask you if we have your testimony, but.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Representative Bentz, if I could add a little bit more on what Fleet Administration knows about natural gas vehicles. We have close to 100 natural gas vehicles within the fleet right now, from we've had for many years. What we do see is a cost savings in fuel. Natural gas right now is at about $1.25 a therm, which is equivalent to about a gallon of fuel. Plus, the fuel efficiency for these vehicles is very comparable to a standard sedan, if not slightly better, along with the benefits of the greenhouse gas reductions.
Okay, thank you. And is any more comments you'd like to make? We'd love to hear.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, just that the fleet is in its support of providing this opportunity for Daimler to test their vehicle. Any opportunity for the department to foster the use of an environmentally friendly fuel is something we would like to be able to participate in.
Okay. I guess that just brought up a little question for me, and that is the pricing that you might be leaning towards. Is that a rule making piece, or is that just recovery of costs, or?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes, that is what we would do in rule, is set what that would be for our current operations or going to the next biennium. We are looking at what is cost recovery for fuel, and it would be basically set at a per gallon rate of how much that would be, and just in order to recover cost.
Okay, thank you. And no other questions. Thank you for coming today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Doug Paro, is he still here? Yeah, in the back. If you want to come up. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Doug Paro. I represent the Bicycle Transportation Alliance. Appreciate the opportunity to talk with you a little bit about this bill, and particularly Section 15. And I'm sorry that it seems like we're behind the gun a little bit in terms of the timing of the committee having addressed this. We understand the impossibility of keeping an oversized load completely within the travel lane. We also are mindful of the alternative of to allowing oversized loads to encroach on adjacent lanes, the bike lane as well as the center turn lane. That alternative perhaps being widening roads that's expensive and in urban areas frequently is detrimental to bicycling and to pedestrians. So we understand those issues. When we saw the proposed language, we were initially concerned that the language appears to leave it solely up to the truck driver, that question of when and to what extent they need to or can overlap into particularly the bike lane, obviously, is what we're interested in. However, in our conversations with ODOT, we are comforted by the fact and the reassurance that the other statutes that are in the Oregon Vehicle Code dealing with safe passing distances and yielding to bicycles and bike lanes and those other protective kinds of statutes will continue to be in place and will continue to be applicable. We also understand from ODOT that the changes really are a reflection of their historic interpretation of the statutes, and that there are no known problems resulting from that historic interpretation. For these reasons, we are not opposed to the proposed changes in the bill, and we look forward and appreciate the willingness of ODOT to work with us if any problems are identified in the future, and to work with the trucking industry to resolve those problems. So thank you very much, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
For your testimony. And committee, that's pretty much all that signed up that really want to speak. But if you have questions, some of them will come forward and answer them. So if we have no more questions on the House bill, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 3676 and open a public hearing on House Bill 3677. And Patrick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll have to shuffle. May I borrow your... I'm sure there's a good summary written on this bill somewhere. Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 3677 amends the requirement for signage for service station operators to require that the signage visible from the street show the prices for the lowest grade of fuel. And it adds a new requirement that service station operators display prices for all grades and types of fuel on signage that is available from the dispensing device at the station. That's what we have, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Okay, and I'm going to ask Paul to come up. Paul Romaine, sorry. Mr. Romaine.
Yeah. I think as you go through life, you go through the Paul and then Mr. Romaine and then back to Paul. I think I'm back to Paul.
Okay.
Look out for Paulie.
Yeah. Hey, you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Romaine. I'm an attorney in Portland, and I represent the Oregon Petroleum Association. House Bill 3677, I testified to earlier at the interim when you had a meeting in January. It's actually a very simple bill. The need for it arose when the Department of Justice, who actually administers administrative rules concerning advertising of gasoline, proposed changes to their current administrative rules, and in a meeting with them in November that included Department of Agriculture, Department of Justice, AAA, members of our group, we determined that, frankly, complying with the existing law would make it almost impossible for the consumer to get a whole bunch of information while you're actually driving. The sign would be so loaded with information if you chose to post, because that, again, it's an optional. You don't have to post. You can basically not post. But if you choose to post, then you would have to post every single grade of every single fuel that you sell. And the problem with that is when this law was originally passed, we sold a couple of grades of fuel. That was it. And now we sell at least three grades of gasoline most stations. You will have diesel, you may have PUC diesel, you may have tax diesel, you may have some alternative fuel like E85 ethanol. You're going to have a sign that you're going to get a sore neck trying to read as you drive by or cause an accident. So again, meeting with AAA with and other folks, we devised what we have before you, which is that we post the lowest grade of all the different fuels that we sell. That's sort of the street sign. When you come in then to the station, there has to be every grade, every nuance of every grade, basically cash, credit, everything, so the consumer is totally informed when they're in the station of what the cost or what their options are. But again, what you're talking about is a street sign versus not a street sign. The reason that we brought this to you now instead of waiting or didn't bring it to you last session was because we didn't get notice that the Justice Department was going to do rulemaking under the existing law or change the rule until this fall. When we met this fall with them, we determined that, yes, there was a problem. Our first ask of them was, could you just, using the rule, make it so that we do pretty much what we have here? And they said, no, the law is pretty clear. You have to have everything out there. So we then said, would you do a law change? They said they didn't have time to do it, that we could put it in, and they are neutral on this. They'll do whatever you want to do. In fact, they called today to say they would not be here to testify, but they're just neutral. Again, AAA is fine with it. They represent the consumer groups who will be driving by. It's a simple change. There is one amendment that we have requested. The chair has allowed us to put it in legislative council, and that's simply to make sure that this applies to new signs after the effective date of the law, or any changed sign after the effective date of the law, so you're not, in effect, requiring all the service stations out there to go out and do new signage immediately. So this will be a gradual change that we believe is consumer-friendly. There are different, you know, pricing out there. If you're paying by cash, that's one thing. If you're paying credit card, the idea is to get the information to the consumer before they make the purchase in the best way possible. Frankly, if we could beam it into their head before they got into the station, that would be a great thing to do. We haven't developed the technology there yet. So what's the most consumer-friendly way to go? This is what we came up with the interested parties. Again, we're not wedded to any particular thing, but we think this will work, and we ask your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Berger.
Thank you. Paul, when did this go into effect, the sign requirement? Is it, how long ago? I mean, you've been around long enough to remember, I'm sure, when the Ford put out his first Model T. But, I mean, where did this come from?
Madam Chair, Representative Berger,
It's a serious question.
Did you ever hear about glass houses and stone?
Today.
Be careful. I'll defend your honor.
Thank you, Representative Collins. I have a young man back up here.
The law went into effect in the 80s, and it came in into effect. Actually, Representative then Bob Shiprack was the one who shepherded it through. And what it was somebody was, in effect, putting a very low street price out, and then when you got in there, there was another grade that was really high. And so Justice had a concern about that. That's why we had the sell, display, and a sign visible at or near the dispensing device to make sure a person knew what it was, not just right on a little thing you really couldn't see right on the device. So we're trying to get as much consumer information out there as possible. The problem now is that there are just too many grades of gasoline. I mean, you just authorized another one, which we could be selling. We actually were at one point compressed natural gas in the previous. Daimler is doing some experiments with that. That's a fuel. There were some stations that did have that at one point, but they don't now, but they'd have to post, again, under our law, they'd have to post the lowest price on that. But you wouldn't have to post every single grade. That's all.
Thank you.
Representative Schaffler. Did you have a question?
Yeah, but okay. I'll wait. That's okay.
Well, I just Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam
My
Chair.
My head only turns one way. Sorry.
Well, we over here in Siberia often are ignored.
I'll work on it. That's Paul did.
Hi, Paul. Does this apply to the card lock stations too? Do you know?
Madam Chair, Representative Boone, it wouldn't apply to a card lock because that's not a retail station.
Oh, okay.
It's basically a card lock is a negotiated price. When you're there are many prices that you'll be paying depending on who you are when you're at a card lock. You've in effect negotiated the price with the supplier. They're just giving you access to it.
Okay. Thank you.
It's not something that's posted. You have a contract price if you're at a card lock.
Okay, Representative Schaffler.
Thank you. I'd imagine that regular unleaded is probably the most sold gas at most filling stations. In all likelihood, that probably will be the price. If they have to put one price out there, wouldn't that be the price they'd probably put out there?
Yes. You have to put the lowest grade of gasoline. So regular, you're not going to have anything lower than, or excuse me, Madam Chair, Representative Schaffler. After all these years, I should actually know that. You would have to put the lowest grade, the regular. Now, this would not stop you from putting premium or anything else out there, but you have to put out the lowest grade.
Follow up.
And thank you. And that regular unleaded is the lowest grade?
I believe that's the lowest grade. Madam Chair, Representative Schaffler, I believe that is the lowest grade available of gasoline.
Representative Call.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Romaine, I'm wondering if we can, I just want to make sure I understand what's currently in existence. So right now there is a rule in place that says if you put up a sign advertising a price for one grade of gasoline, then you have to put up signs advertising the price for all grades of fuel that the station sells.
Correct.
So what this rule, this change would do then would say that the only thing you, does it require you to actually put up a sign?
Madam Chair, Representative Call, no. Yeah, you, that doesn't change from existing law. You don't have to put up a sign.
Right. So if you choose to put up a sign, the only sign you have to put up under this law, if we change it, is the one for the lowest grade of gasoline.
Madam Chair, Representative Call, and you then have to have another sign in the station that's visible from the pumps showing all the different prices that are available, cash, credit, different grades, everything.
But if you're driving down the street and you need premium gasoline in your car and you're looking at the signs, you're not going to know which gas station has the lowest price until you go in. And then to know which gas station might have another lower price, you'd have to physically leave that gas station and go to another one and then to another one and then decide which one had the lowest price.
Madam Chair, Representative Call, yes, that's the trade-off. the problem that if you start under existing rule, if you require every single grade to be posted and the different permeations that Justice wants, then more and more people are going to go to, I'm just not going to post. And they're, that's what we're trying to avoid.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, if I might, I guess for me, I see that that's an issue, right? Because if you have two different rates for cash and credit, then you have everything up there twice. And I see that that's a problem. I guess my concern is that if you look at what's on the roadway right now, there are just a couple, three things that are most commonly used. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if scaling it back to one is necessarily the best solution, or if there was some sort of middle ground between you have to put everything up there or you only have to do one, if we can keep things, just give the public a little bit more information, but not exactly what the Department of Justice is looking for. And can you talk to me about why that solution, that middle ground solution, wasn't the solution that everybody latched on to?
Madam Chair, Representative Call, frankly, one of the things you could do is say you only have to post gasoline. You don't have to post diesel. You could, and then you post, because what we're trying to do is just simply limit the number of things that you actually have to post up there. But more and more consumers are going for different alternative fuels, so, you know, this is sort of the best we could come up with.
Right.
Is it perfect? I don't know. I'll let you know in a couple of years.
And I don't know. I'm not being critical. Right. I don't really have a problem with it. I just want to make sure that we're not actually removing information from the consuming public that they would like to have.
And, Madam Chair, Representative Call, if there's a better solution, we're open to it. We're just trying to avoid a situation where you're going to drive people to, in effect, take down signs.
Right. Which harms the consuming public more right. than... Right.
So
thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Shoffler.
This is taking a lot longer than I thought it was going to, but
that's what happens
keep
when
you
I start
any longer.
Talking.
But is there any, you could put a sign up saying you have E85, and you don't have to put the price on it, though, do you? Wouldn't if you were a gas station owner, wouldn't you want people to know what you have? But do you have to put the price up there too?
Madam Chair, Representative Shoffler, you could, as long as you're not posting a price, the language is triggered when you post a price. So you could put up E85 available, B20 biodiesel available, along with B2. You could have three grades of different gasoline. You could have CNG if, you know, Daimler's experiment with natural gas vehicles works. There's a lot of different stuff up there, and it is tricky trying to decide what's enough consumer information, and that's why the idea of a sign at the station was kind of a good idea to give that consumer information. Are there going to be some people who come in there and are mad because the premium is a little higher than they thought it would be? Yes. Can we solve every problem? No. Is the consumer going to get a lot more information than they would than if there was no sign? Yes. So, but again, if you have a better idea, we are more than willing to consider it and put it into statute. We're just trying to get a little flexibility.
Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Paul, how common is this proposed solution? Not that ubiquity is the best standard for sensibility, but just curious. Are there other states that have adopted similar changes?
Madam Chair, Representative Edwards, we have absolutely no idea.
Great answer.
Appreciate the direct response.
Yeah, could you elaborate on
that? When I go get gas, and it's always pretty much the same station, so you kind of know, and you can pretty much guarantee, at least at the stations I go to, that there's like a 10-cent increment between the levels of oil, but that doesn't start going into the 85 and all of these other ones. But so, I mean, in my mind, I would think that most people probably would have a pretty good idea of what the differences between the prices of them would be, especially after so many years of history.
Madam Chair, again, the stations I pay attention to, I used to put premium into my car, then I realized you could pretty much get away with putting regular into your car, and it's not going to really make a difference, so I dropped 20 cents a gallon. There are some stations I've seen that go up in increments of like 12 cents. I think the pilot station on I-5 just north of here seems to be that way and other places, but usually it's some kind of gradation. We always live in fear of the bad actor who's going to get out there and do something weird. We don't know. We'd like to have Justice Department have enough flexibility with their rules so that they can go after somebody who's gouging the public, which we think they can. So, if this doesn't work, we'll be back with you to put something else in. You have to understand it was gas station owners who came to the legislature to ask for the law in the first place because of unfair competition. Mm-hmm. We're not trying to... I mean, if you want unfair competition, don't have any sign posting, because then it's just guess. But we're trying to get as much information as possible with as little burden as possible.
Thank you, Representative Gilman.
Paul, if they don't post a sign, then they don't have to have a sign in the... That's too bad. It seems to me that they should be required to have a sign inside or at the pump listing all those.
Madam Chair, Representative Gilman, today, if you don't post a sign, you still have to have the price on the pump.
Oh.
The price is on the pump for that. Okay. Whatever you're getting out of that pump, it's on the pump. But it's no place else.
Yes. The way this is written, the requirement for the street visible signage remains optional, but there's still a mandatory requirement for a price availability for prices at the pump. Is that what it is, or always
Chair,
is, or
yeah, I think, Madam Chair, Mr. Brennan, we are not changing the law concerning pricing on the pump. We're not touching that. We're just trying to figure out a way to not have a 90-foot sign.
Okay. I think we have run out of questions.
Thank you.
Run out of gas, Madam Chair.
Yes. And I have a Brian Wallace.
Chair Byron, members of this committee, my name is Brian Wallace. I am a resident of Polk County, the good District 20, and I'm here in opposition of this bill. And I have a few reasons why. First and foremost, historically, a special session is kind of, I look at like a supplementary budget session. It's to handle matters that matter, the economy, the budget, etc. This bill strikes a nerve with me because for whatever reason it's brought forth because of rules.
Back a little bit.
Committee. Okay,
it's
sorry.
Very good.
Thank
mic.
You. Because of the Justice Department's interpretation of what stations have to post, what have you, I think it's a waste of time for this. For this special session. There's a few other bills that I take issue with, but I think that there's a lot of other things that you could get to that are more pressing. So with that said, I'll try to limit my comments because hopefully you have more important things to do. But by this bill, who knows? I take issue with not disclosing, like Representative Call was mentioning, not disclosing all prices. I happen to drive two motor vehicles that require Supreme, which is 92 octane, which is the highest octane that you can purchase. And for the reason that Representative Call was saying, I don't want to have to pull into a station and then get irritated because they've hiked that grade just to reel me in with the lowest grade and posting that cash price, and then I have to go elsewhere. I think as a taxpayer paying 24 cents per gallon That needs to be disclosed to me and the rest of the citizens of the state. And paying 18.4 cents per gallon at the federal level, I think it's very much an issue when I'm paying almost 43 cents a gallon for taxes. I want to know all the rates. I think I kind of might have figured out what the true intention of this is. I don't want to cast any sort of stone, but I believe this may lead to gouging at the pump. Like Chair Beyer, you were mentioning, there's usually a 10-cent difference between grades. Between 87 and 89 octane, there's about a 10-cent difference, and between 89 and 92, there's about a 13-cent difference right now. I have this suspicion that I'm going to pull in, and what is the normal 13-cent spread between 89 and 92 is now going to magically jump to 15 cents or 16 or 17 cents, probably anywhere 2 to 4 cents per gallon, in the hope that I'll just go, I'm already here, I might as well just pay the extra couple cents per gallon. Well, a couple cents per gallon for me for one of my cars is about $150 a year. That's a lot of money in this tough time, especially when a lot of us aren't getting cost of living increases. So that's just one example that I have. Also, prices vary up to 20 cents across gas stations just here in Salem. In the area that I live in, Supreme is 20 cents more than it is for the exact same company in East Salem. So I need to know who's charging what for the Supreme prices. And if I don't know, you know, that's a lot more than $150. That's more than $500 a year that I could be out. I think that a simple fix to this is, I don't subscribe to what Paul was saying with the Oregon Petroleum Association. Currently, the law says may display a sign visible from the street at the lowest cash prices charged for the sale of all grades. So if they want to charge a difference between cash and credit, they can post their cash prices and just put cash. And that tells me, oh, that's the cash price. Maybe I'm going to pay a couple cents more for credit. But most stations don't charge a difference. I mean, I go all over the Portland metro area and all over the Salem area, and a lot of stations have kind of gone away from that. In fact, there's one station, I'll just plug it, not that I'm affiliated with it, Costco, that only accepts credit. Why? They don't want their employees handling cash. And they probably don't want to get robbed either. Because if the more cash you have on hand, you'll get robbed. I mean, so I think the simple fix is to leave it as is and have the rule-making committee for the OAR come together and maybe look at the plain language of the existing language and have them figure it out. Maybe even change this law to say that if they desire to have a cash discount, then just put a little sign saying, we offer cash discount. I mean, that's a simple fix. So then the consumer will know, okay, that's the credit price, but they offer a cash discount. Maybe I'll pull in there and get a couple cents off per gallon. Anyway, I'm gonna stop there. I don't think that this warrants any more time because I think it's kind of a waste of time. That's just my personal opinion. With all due respect of this committee and all members of both houses in this institution, I just wanted to lay forth my opinion. So I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Berger.
Yeah, Brian, thank you for coming in. We had a conversation earlier, and I encouraged him to come and speak to this committee, and I appreciate that you've taken the time to do so. How do you actually shop for gas? I mean, you got these big rigs. I don't know what they are, but they take very expensive gas. Do you drive around and look for the best price?
I do. I keep an eye out. I used to pump gas for 3 years, many, many, many years ago. You know, I look for service. I'm willing to pay a couple more cents, but because I require the super, unleaded. I do look, and there's only a couple of companies, and I'm not going to mention names, that I go with for my gasoline, just knowing what kind of quality and where it comes from. But yeah, I do. I very much look at that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Daily.
Yeah. I think what we're getting at here is maybe two different things. The consumer piece concerns you and legitimately, and I think that they're trying to get at the consumer piece by saying, okay, you can still pull in, don't have to go very far in, and we talked about this, and see all the prices. Yeah, it's not out there on the street, but you can easily do that kind of shopping that you're currently doing. It's an extra pull-in for you. But the trade-off, I think, that we're getting at here, at least in my mind, is that sort of visual pollution of every type of gas there is. And I think that I'm aware, and maybe you're not, that what's coming at us is a whole bunch more kinds of fuel that will be pumped out at Oregonians, a whole bunch of different grades. And under current statute, those signs are going to be so big and so ugly that you don't want to drive down your street. So Paul offered compromise. Do you have a sense of where we could go to get, and the window I think here is that rulemaking is going to happen. And so if we're going to do a change, now is the time. What would you like to see as a compromise if you were sitting here?
Chair Beyer and Representative Berger, I believe that the only additional fuel that's going to have to be listed on these signs is E85, and I have yet to see many filling stations around the state that offer that. The ones that do have the little blue and gold E85 emblem, but they don't list the price just because it's so sparse and there's only a few places that you can get that. With that said, once that starts to kind of roll into more filling stations, they'll have to list that price. And I think that listing a cash and credit price, I'm not fooled by that. I don't think that that needs to happen. I think that just a simple, we offer a cash discount would be good enough. But I don't want to lose sight of them having to disclose every price for every grade, because that's certainly a consumer protection piece. And I know that the Department of Justice and the Attorney General is real big on consumer protection. And I think that for all the reasons that I laid forth earlier, that's certainly going to protect me. This wouldn't be an issue so much. We don't regulate this sort of thing for grocery stores. We don't let them or force them to post every price they charge for every box of cereal or whatever on billboards. But this is a little different in that as a consumer, I'm paying a lot of taxes. The rates are very different from one side of town to the other, and I think that this is necessary to keep in place for that reason. As far as signage being too big, you know, there's probably local ordinances. I think that should be dealt with at the local level. If it's a piece of property or a sign that's on or near a highway, maybe ODOT has regulations for how big those signs can be, you know. So I don't know. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I don't think it's very broke.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Seeing no other questions, thank you for coming in. We appreciate it. And I see a Paul Romain in the back who might have a few last comments here, or be able to address any questions. The testimony has.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, again, Paul Romain. I just wanted to make approximately 80% of all gasoline sold is regular grade. Okay, that's about 10% is the sort of mid-grade, and about 10% is the high-octane grade. So what we are trying to do here is cover the fuels that are most used by the general public. And that's why we came up with this. I just confirmed the numbers with the Department of Ag folks, but that was my understanding. Thank you.
Representative.
I just had one thought. Having been involved with some antitrust cases where different station operators were adjusting their prices every morning as they do, as they glance up and down the street and try to figure out what everybody's charging for everything, you notice all the prices are about the same. And that's not supposed to happen, but somehow magically it does. Now, if this passes, they'll have to be, I guess, less subtle about how they find out what their competition is charging, because they won't know. All they'll know is the lowest price. So what happens in that regard?
Representative, or Madam Chair, Representative Benz, are you asking me how to avoid an antitrust case, or no?
You probably know the choice.
Yes, I mean, I don't believe any station owners actually conspire to raise prices, because that would be illegal. And I know that they all check what their competitors do. I mean, that's just normal business practices. Everybody in business checks what the competitor is doing, and you price accordingly. But the fact that it's not publicly disclosed, you can still drive by and check it. You just have to actually pull in. You'll see a sign. And again, this will go gradual to the new law. So I don't think it's going to affect that issue one way or another.
Thank you. I didn't mean to suggest that they were conspiring to fix prices. I wanted to simply say that caused me to reflect upon your point. And the real issue is, how does the market work? Right. And I think the way it works is, as I indicated, folks check what their competition, whether you're Walmart or you're always checking. And I'm just wondering if this is going to make that market function less efficiently. I understand the problem, and I just want to know your answer, and I think you've done that. You've said, well, you'll have to get out and go look much more aggressively, just like when Safeway checks Walmart. Go look.
Right.
But it will make it more difficult, I think.
Yes.
Representative Schaffler, and then I have Representative Boone.
I buy my gas. There's five gas stations I primarily always buy my gas at, depending on where I'm at and where I'm going, because I just went through my head and counted them. And I'll bet you, as a result of this, nothing changes at any of those gas stations as a result of this. Nothing.
Madam Chair, Representative Schaffler, the only thing that will change is they won't have to redo their outside sign, because Justice Department will have rules that will conform to reality.
Thank you. Representative Boone.
Well, this is a good one to wrap it up with. And Paul knows probably all these stations I'm talking about, but in our neck of the woods, in my whole district, usually, if you see a gas station, you're out of gas, you don't care what they charge. You're happy to just pull in and have somebody be there.
So. I don't need to respond. Thank you.
And I just have a couple little things. So if we don't deal with this and the rulemaking goes through and they're required to post more information on the signs, do you think there might be an inclination for station owners to just quit posting?
Madam Chair, yes. That's why we came in to you this session. That's why it's a special session issue. I mean, believe me, none of us in the lobby wants to have anything to do with you all this month. We really don't. We like you, but not that much. But it was one of these issues where we had an opportunity. We asked Justice Department, work with us with the rule. They looked at the rule. They said, we're in the law, and we can't. This is what the law says. We said, well, then let's wait until, go slowly, send the notices out slowly, wait till the end of 2011. We can't. We're going to go right into the rulemaking now. So that's when we came to you, Madam Chair, and said, look, can you do this? Everybody's on board with it, at least Justice Department, obviously. Representative Berger's constituent is not on board, but there may be others, but we basically were trying to get this thing done as quickly as possible so we don't have to go through rulemaking and then come back into you in the 11th session and say, can you please correct this problem, because it's causing people to basically take down their signs rather than give consumer information.
Okay. And the other question I have, at least at the gas station I go to, posted right there on the gas pumps are your taxes. Oregon is this. the federal, it's this. And there's no requirement to do that, I assume. And do you know how many do it?
Madam Chair, I think as a public relations effort, I don't think we have to, I can't say for sure. I don't think we have to post what the taxes are. But I think as a PR effort, so people understand that a good portion of the price of gasoline, now if we, when the new tax goes into effect, it'll be about close to 50 cents a gallon, actually it'd be about 50 cents a gallon, and in some jurisdictions like Eugene, it'd be 55 cents a gallon is actually taxes. So when somebody comes in and complains about gas being 250, you can say if you didn't have taxes, it'd be $2. But I think that's more of a PR effort.
Representative,
wrong answer.
Madam Chair, you're exactly right. And if we lowered the tax, they'd be buying new tires because they'd be beating the crap out of their car on a lousy road. Yep. So these taxes pay for good roads, pretty, and put a lot of people to work.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative Shoffler, I didn't mean that. It came out a little bit differently. But we actually, as the most of you know, we supported the gas tax increase. We believe it is a user fee. We were very adamant in our support for it, and we like the idea of using it for the roads. So we agree with you. We just want people to understand that this is, they're paying for road use, and they should pay for road use.
So, and do you have an idea of how many actually do it? Do pretty much all of them do it, or?
Madam Chair, I have absolutely no idea.
Okay. With that, I don't have any more questions. Anybody else? Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'm going to go ahead, because we're waiting on paperwork, close the work session, or the public hearing for House Bill 3677 as I stumble around. And what is... Do we just carry? How do I move them to?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We once a bill has been heard, we can at least through tomorrow post it with. I believe it's post and go is the wording used. So we'll post it. If you want to post that for Friday, we'll put them on for Friday as soon as we get upstairs. They'll be on. Both these bills can be on the Friday agenda.
All right. Thank you. And with that, we are adjourned.